This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 19, Episode 11. This is Writing Excuses.
A close reading on voice, an overview, and why we chose Time War.
15 minutes long.
Because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Wan.
I'm Aaron.
And I'm Howard.
So this episode is the first of our close reading series. And I'm very excited to dig into this one. We've chosen for our first module here to focus on the aspect of voice in fiction. And we thought, what better book than that? Than Max Gladstone and Amal El-Mukhtar's This Is How You Lose the Time War. This was a novella that was published in 2015 that features two alternating voices from two different POVs and a series of letters written between them. It won a bunch of awards. It's been very popular. And I think the voice in this book is very distinct and very powerful. And much of the charm of the book is in how these two writers are approaching these characters and how the voice is coming through.
There's also the elephant in the room, which is when I got this book out to reread it and showed it to my 22-year-old and told them, I think you might like this book a lot. They said, yes, Bigelus Dickelus said the same thing. I will get to it eventually. And they will get to it eventually because I'm going to bring this copy back and shove it in front of them. Yes, this book got huge props in, was it 21, 22?
It was the, oh my gosh, what is 23?
I do not remember.
It's 23.
Summer 23. 23.
Summer yeah. 23.
This is, I mean, we're recording this in fall of, or in yeah. December of 23, so. Yeah.
It was this summer.
It yeah. was this year?
It won. Yeah. It won all of the awards when it came out, and then it was rediscovered by Bigelus Dickelus, and now is a phenomenon sweeping the globe.
And yeah. part of the reason it's doing that is that the voice is so strong and so it speaks to a lot of people. And I think voice is the reason it does yeah. that.
So I want to just point something out that as we're talking about voice, and that the voice of this is one of the things that is so mm-hmm. important, but voice is also one of those wiggly words that we use a lot. And I find that it tends to mean three different things. There's the mechanical voice, which is like the style, you know, first person, third person, the mechanics of it. There's the aesthetic voice, what it sounds like. And then there's the personal voice, which is what the author brings to it. We are primarily going to be focusing on the aesthetic and mechanical voice when mm-hmm. we're talking about this, in part because we don't know which parts which author wrote. So it's harder to pin down and say, this is because of their life experience.
They have said who wrote which parts.
Oh, they have now.
Yeah.
For a long time, yeah. they refused to.
Oh. I'm pretty sure that's public. So I have the other elephant in the room is that I have a particularly inside perspective on this book because the first two books we've chosen, I swear to God, I did not do this on purpose. I did not suggest these, are both books that I have worked on as a literary agent. So Max and Amal are both my clients, and I've worked on Time War since its inception. So I have a little bit of inside perspective and sometimes filtering out what is public and what is not.
Drop
is
the knowledge, Dong Wan.
But I will very gladly give a few peeks behind the curtain when I can.
Yeah, double check with them on that one.
I will, yeah.
So for me, one of the things that struck me immediately the first time I started reading this was that there was a poetic denseness to the language that you see less often in science fiction. It's, you know, I can think of other examples, but the poetic denseness was one of the things that pulled me in and also slowed me down because I felt like I needed to savor the book as I was going through, that the language, the voice itself was as important as the plot, that it was inextricably tied together.
Yeah, and I think some of that is the form of the book itself. Mm-hmm. You know, because so much of it is epistolary, it's in letters, I think that there's a certain indulgence in some ways that as readers we give to a letter. We sort of assume that it will be like that you're going to lean into maybe the poetry of things when you're writing a letter to another person. And what I think it was such a smart idea, because while in like non-letter prose, you might be like, oh, this is a lot. In a letter, you're like, oh, no, this completely makes sense because it's such an expression, such a personal expression, and therefore a way in which a voice can come out so cleanly and clearly.
Interesting, mm-hmm. because I actually have the opposite experience when reading it, which is that the letters are the more straightforward prose than the third person passages.
Interesting.
An example, the piece, there are two pieces that hooked me on the first page. The first piece, second line and beginning of third paragraph, blood slicks her hair. She breathes out steam in the last night of this dying world. This was fun, she thinks. Okay, I am on board.
Yeah.
I am on board. And then paragraph four, this is where the prose gets dense and does a whole bunch of world building for us. She holds a corpse that was once a man, her hands gloved in its guts, her fingers clutching its alloy spine. She lets go, and the exoskeleton clatters against rock. Crude technology, ancient, bronze to depleted uranium. He never had a chance. That is the point of Red. Okay, you've thrown a bunch of cool technical terms at me, and I'm like, oh, wow, future battlefield. Wait, crude technology? Wait, what?
Yeah.
And now I have, and that's the second hook. The first hook is, that was fun. And the second hook is, how advanced is this? Please world build some more for me.
Right, and I think that was part of what I'm thinking about. And we're going to dive into this way more in the next episode when we're talking about, we're going to do a really close reading about Red's perspective, looking at these first pages. But in general, one of the things that Amal and Max are trying to do in this book is describe this time war, which is technology that we don't have and an understanding of time that we don't have. And so they are using this metaphor, poetic language to attempt to communicate something to us because we don't have the language for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that juxtaposition of those two things of like, this is a very highly technical thing that I'm going to attempt to explain to you people who are locked into the single timeline. It makes things really juicy and lovely.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the main reasons I wanted to pick this. I wanted to pick it both because I deeply love the voice of this book. I find it very affecting and very sort of pleasurable to engage with, but then there are really almost four different voices in this book mm-hmm. because you have the red sections, you have the blue sections, you have red letters and blue letters, and each of them has a distinctly different voice that is communicating different information and different world building as we go. So one of the reasons I wanted to examine this one is we get to sort of do that contrast between, mm-hmm. okay, what's happening here versus what's happening here versus what's happening here. And so it felt very useful as a teaching tool in addition to one that is just, oh, they are executing this at a very high level.
Yeah,
and it's delightful to engage
with. Let me circle back on that teaching tool briefly. You can pick up two similar books by different authors and compare voice and ask yourself, you know, why do these sound different? Why do these feel different? Why mm-hmm. do these work differently? And that's valuable. Having that experience in one book where the same narrative, a singular narrative, is being run in multiple voices is utterly invaluable. Mm-hmm. I cannot think of a better teaching tool for voice than reading and rereading and analyzing your own experiences as you soak up the book again and again than this book.
And while this book has a very sort of unique style, it's also something that you can do in books with multiple POVs. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to take what we're doing in this close reading and apply it somewhere else, you could take a book that has a lot of different points of view and think about how is the voice being done differently by the author from one character to the next.
Yeah. I mean, and this is just an extreme case, which I think is what makes it so useful, right? Of having such distinctly different voices. And it's such a voice-y book, you know? And what I mean by that is they're just leaning so much into that voice as a forward component of it, which in part they can get away with because it's a shorter book, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't overstay its welcome. This might be more difficult to do at great length, but given the compactness of the book and how quick the experience of reading it is, you can really push pretty hard on the voice lever, which they've done in this case.
I have a question that I am going to pose after our break.
I want to talk to y'all about Scavenger's Reign, which is one of the best things I saw in 2023. It's an animated series on Max that tells the story of a group of survivors crash-landed on an alien planet after their colony ship malfunctions mid-journey. What makes the show wonderful is its incredible art style, but also its approach to how they portray alien life and how humans interact with it. It's really deeply interested in systems and ecologies, and tells a really beautiful story about how humans interact with their environment and with each other. I really can't recommend it highly enough.
The big question is, if you are but one author, but one mortal author trying to write multiple voices, as you said, you know, a novel with multiple POVs, can you do it this well?
Well, one thing I want to point out as we go into this close reading series is we're picking these as examples that we hope are instructive. We're not saying you have to do what these authors are doing or replicate these. We're picking examples that are really pushing the boundaries of what is possible in this particular sphere. So this is pushing the boundaries of voice. When we get to Memory Called Empire, that is pushing the boundaries of what you can do with world building. When we get to Fifth Season, that's going to be pushing the boundaries of what you can do with structure. I do not recommend trying to replicate these things. We're showing you big examples so you can take lessons from them and learn from them.
So I'm going to give you a couple of words that we're going to be using as we're going through. As you probably know, I'm an audiobook narrator, and when I'm trying to learn how to do character voice, when I'm teaching it, there's a couple of tools that we use that are very useful for doing voice on the page. So pacing, accent, attitude, and what I call experience. So pacing is kind of the cadence, the rhythms of the voice, where they pause, whether they're doing long sentences, short sentences, where they put the punctuations. And that's something that you manipulate really by punctuation. It's replicating the way we pause in speech. Accent is all about word choice and sentence structure. It's not about pronunciation, which is what a lot of people focus on. So you'll hear us talking about the word choice and sentence structures that are specific to each character. And then attitude is exactly what it sounds like. When you're talking to someone on the phone, and I know that a lot of people never do that anymore, but you can tell, when you're listening to us, you can tell if we're smiling or not smiling. Mechanically, that's because the shape of our facial mask changes, but really it's that our attitude is driving the way everything happens. And on the page, you're manipulating that with word choice, sentence structure, and punctuation. And then experience is about how the character views the world. So specifically when you're hearing us talk about red and blue, you're going to hear us talking about use of botanical metaphors versus use of mechanical metaphors, depending on which character we're talking about. And that comes from their experience. So those are a couple of levers that you can push very consciously without having to like have this extensive acting career. Or in Amal's case, Amal is a poet and is using a lot of additional tools. Mm-hmm. But those are four things that I find very useful.
Oh, gosh, this would have been 40 years ago. I was reading the liner notes. Liner notes must have been on a Billy Joel album. and Billy Joel talked about getting his start. And he said, I listened to things on the radio and I told myself, I can do that. And that, I wanted to be a rock star for years. And then I got into cartooning and into writing because I looked at things and said, I can do that. And I look at Time War and think, I can't do that. And if you are feeling the same thing, I just want to express some camaraderie. a little bit of commiseration, and a little bit of hopefulness, which is that as we go through these, we want to give you the tools so that on your third or fourth reread of one of these close reads, you begin to tell yourself, oh, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't even have to be doing that entire, like, you can't write Time War because that's where the personal voice comes in, their own experience, the thing that drives them. But you can use the tools that they're using in Time War. And that's the piece that we're hoping that you're going to get out of these really close reads, mm-hmm. that here's this tool that you can use and apply to your own personal voice and your own experience, that will come out on the page.
Well, and one thing to keep in mind is also that this is two people, right? Mm-hmm. This is a collaborative project. They're bringing double the firepower to this project. And anybody who's read Amal and Max's work individually knows that those are already some pretty heavy guns that they got. So there's something special that can happen in a collaboration where the sum is even greater than the individual parts. And it's very hard to get to. I don't love collaboration projects, actually. It's one of the grand ironies of this book is I tend to be fairly opposed to them because they're so difficult to do well. But in this case, those two came together in a way that their voices, you know, really braided together in this really powerful way that leads to the reading experience that we have in front of us.
Yeah. So, Erin, you tend to do fairly voicey fiction also when you're writing. What are the things that you think about when you're looking at Time War in kind of relation to the way you approach your own work?
I think I like the way that you broke down sort of the pacing. I'm going to forget them all now.
Pacing, accent, attitude, experience.
Pacing, accent, attitude, experience. I really wanted that to be like something I could say. I was like, pie, that's not
no,
really.
No, sorry.
It's okay. But I think that pacing especially, like I love to look at the way in which other folks use punctuation because mm-hmm. like really as mm-hmm. writers, I find us to be a controlling lot. You know, we don't just want you to read it. We want you to read it how we would read it in our own homes. And so thinking about, I wonder if the way I'm reading this is the experience that they intended me to have, why is in the thing that Howard read earlier, okay, there are some shorter bits in there. There are things that are two-word sentences. Why is this period here? Why not a dash? Mm-hmm. Why was this not a semicolon? Oh, it's because I need to stop all the way here. I like to really think about that because when I'm doing it, I know the effect that I'm going for. Mm-hmm. And what I like to try to do is listen to somebody else and wonder about the effect that they're going for. It's sort of like the listening to the song on the radio and going, I think this song is meant to make me sad. Why and how? Because if I'm writing a song that wants to make somebody sad, I should think about, if I understand how they did it, then I can understand a way that maybe I could do it better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments that I will occasionally have with copy editors who will never see the argument back, like the book is never returned to the copy editor with my, no! But I'll have things that are phrased like a question but not have a question mark because they aren't said with a rising tone. And, you know, like, what did you say? Like, what did you say? Like, there's a falling tone there. And if you put a mm-hmm. question mark, it's a very different, what did you say? And that kind of thing, I see early career writers, and I know I did it myself, get hung up on the grammar. Mm-hmm. And having something grammatically correct is not what you're trying to do when you write. Grammar is there for when you need to express clarity in some way, but most of the time, what you're looking for is just, do these rhythms flow?
I look at grammar as the rule set that we play by when things are complicated and we need to make sure that everything's working well. And breaking those rules is what we do when we need a new rule in order to communicate something different. And so we will deliberately throw down a word like misunderestimate, which isn't a word, but which we can kind of tell what it means, and away we go. And the copy editor will say, hey, this isn't a word, and you say, but it's my word for this book.
Yeah.
One way I think about voice is that voice is about clarity for the mm-hmm. reader. It's about clarifying the reader's experience of all the information you're trying to give them, right? Because it is the vessel with which that's handed over. And so sometimes the way you achieve that clarity is by breaking grammatical rules, by, you know, using very complicated language or inventing your own words sometimes, because what you're trying to do is communicate what the emotional experience that you want the reader to have is, right? And so voice is your first interface with them. It's why we're doing this as our first module, is voice is the first and the last thing that you will encounter while reading a book.
Yeah, I also think something else that just occurred to me, a bit of a side note, is that the other thing that I really like to look at is when once you create voice and people understand what that voice is, you have to keep doing the work, but in some ways you've already established who this person mm-hmm. is, mm-hmm. the way that they talk, the way that they think, and it actually helps to put their voice in the mind of your reader.
Yeah.
Like one of my favorite English sentences is, I didn't say you got to keep the money, because you can put the emphasis on every single word in that. Like, I didn't say you got to keep the money. I didn't say you, like, and it's a slightly different meeting.
Yeah.
And if you have the voice of the character established, they will emphasize, hopefully, the word that you would emphasize when you were writing it.
Yeah. This is very similar to what happens in audio fiction. There are character voices that I cannot sustain for an entire thing, like the Lushak in the October Day books. I'm talking like this, and I can't do that for an entire page. So I hit it really hard at the beginning, and then I back off and use it for mm-hmm. emphasis where I want to drive home, this is the Lushak speaking. And I find the same thing with when I'm writing, that I will use those embellishments, the sometimes it's just as simple as italics, but sometimes it's like the flourishy words at places where I want to remove ambiguity about who's speaking or what they mean, mm-hmm. or places where I want to add emphasis. It's like, no, this is seriously this person.
Mm-hmm. Well, one last thing I wanted to point out here is, you know, another reason I think this is a great book to use is so much of the character development and plot development is communicated through alterations in voice.
Mm-hmm.
The voice evolves over the course of the book, and as it does, we grow with the writer or the characters, and our understanding of the world that they live in also evolves, right? So we get to sort of see how you can use voice as an active tool in your fiction. Yeah. I think people think about it as kind of a passive set thing, right? In the first paragraph, you set your voice, and then it's the same throughout. That ideally is not true. It grows and changes with you, and I think this, again, is a pretty radical example of how you can do that.
Before we jump to our homework, is that what we're getting ready to do next? Before, I would like to send us home with a passage that I think fits beautifully. I am glad to know you love reading. Perhaps you should next write from a library. There's so much I want to recommend.
That's perfect.
That is perfect. And on that note, I have your homework for you this week. So what I would like you to do is to take a sentence from a work you love that has a strong and clear voice. So think about what are some voicey pieces that you've read that you really enjoy. Take that sentence and write a scene based on that as a prompt in the same tone and voice as the original. So I'm not trying to get you to replicate the original scene, but take what you love about why it sounds the way it does and try and extend that into your own fiction and make that voice a little bit your own.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Hey, podcast lovers. Did you know that you can upgrade your experience here with our ad-free tier on Patreon? Head over to patreon.com/writing excuses to enjoy an ad-free oasis, as well as access to our virtual Discord community where you can talk with your fellow writers.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. For this episode, your hosts were Mary Robinette Kowal, Dong Wan Song, Aaron Roberts, and Howard Taylor. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.